And the thing is, after all these years, I still look back with wonder.
Greetings, wonderlings, and welcome to another episode of Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast. I'm your host, Angela Bowen. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend and that you were able to celebrate Mother's Day with your mother or do something else very nice for that day. Did you have a special day planned for your mom? Flowers and maybe out to dinner? Or did your husband and children take you out? For all you mothers yourselves out there. Alright, last weekend I went up to the cemetery and I put up the little dog figurines on my mom's headstone, which I do every year, but I did it last week because yesterday my husband Jeremy, his mother, had to work. So we're going to take her out for dinner hopefully this Saturday to celebrate Mother's Day. Now, just to be upfront, my mom did pass away almost 15 years ago after complications from lupus. I usually go, you know, on Mother's Day, but like I said, I had to go last week. So, all right, let's get right into this episode, everybody. Today, I'm going to be reviewing Season 1, Episode 3, My Father's Office, which aired on March 29th, 1988. And also, I'll be reviewing Episode 4, Angel, which aired on April 5th, 1988. In the episode, My Father's Office, we see a young Kevin eager to know more about his father, go to work with him, and after, he views his father in a whole new light. We begin the episode in the Arnold kitchen. We have Kevin and Wayne who are at the kitchen table, and we have a National Geographic, it's a gorilla documentary. I don't know if it's National Geographic or not, but it plays on the little TV behind them. It's the documentary is focused on the male gorilla and its role in the wild of the pack that it's in. So I like that it's kind of comparing it to the situation at hand. Norma hears tires in the driveway quickly come to a screeching halt as she peers out the window. Then she informs Kevin and Wayne that their father has clearly had a bad day at work, so please don't make any noise. Jack walks into the kitchen and he is clearly pissed off. Norma asks him, how was work? Which is the customary response, you know, when your husband comes over, you're like, oh, how's work? Such, you know. Work's work, he grumbles and walks past her. Then we hear a bedroom door shut. Yeah, he clearly is not in the mood to even utter anything. Kevin and Wayne make themselves scarce after Kevin suggests that they play catch outside. And I like how they're united in this. They find common ground together when it comes to their father and everything. Even though in the past two episodes, Wayne's been an average butt to Kevin, they still can find, like I said, common ground when it comes to their father. Adult Kevin narrates that when his father has had a really bad day at work, he just sits in the dark watching TV. Which I can understand. You know, my dad would come home and he wouldn't be in the best of moods either, which would be a result either from him working at the factory or when he farms on the side. Sometimes the weather wouldn't work out when it would come to, you know, he cuts and rakes and bales hay. And when it rains, you really can't do anything. Your day is shot. So, yeah, that will put anyone in a bad mood, especially when, you know, everything has to be done in a certain order. There's a certain time constraint to doing these things. So, yeah. Kevin and Wayne sneak past Jack by crawling out of the living room on their hands and knees. They kind of hands and knees past the television. So, I guess there really was no other way to get from the kitchen to their bedroom without going through the living room. So, adult Kevin comes on again telling us when his father has had a very bad day, like a very, very extremely bad day where he's not talking to anyone, which is kind of what he's doing here. He goes into the backyard and looks through his telescope, Which I honestly think, I think that sounds very therapeutic. You need to decompress after a long, hard day. And, you know, I mentioned to Jeremy as I was watching this, and I said, you know, they live in the city, so how much of what he's seeing, you know, the ambient light might get in the way, possibly. You know, and if he lived in the country, I bet he could really see a lot of cool stuff. The song Blackbird by the Beatles comes on in this scene. The next day, so it's the next day, we see Kevin and Norma. They're at the kitchen table. As she's peeling potatoes for dinner, she's assisting him in his French vocabulary homework. Outside in the driveway, we hear Jack's car pull up and a crash. Then we hear a door open and slam closed. Norma looks over at Kevin, probably already realizing, you know, that's his bike that he probably hit by the crunching sound. Jack comes in the door. He's literally seething with rage and lays right into Kevin. Damn it, Kevin! How many times do I have to tell you not to leave your bicycle in the driveway? Okay, I had my bike run over by my aunt and uncle's van, and they seriously were pretty PO'd as well. What kid back then or now hasn't had that happen, though? Kids, they'll throw their bike wherever they can. That kickstand, literally, it doesn't hold up for anything. I'm telling you, a gust of wind comes over and poof, your bike falls over. Kevin tries to interject, but Jack continues with his finger pointed in Kevin's face. Do you think they grow on trees? If you don't want to take care of it, you don't have to have it. Man, he is really laying into him. How much you want to bet someone getting Jack's shit today at work? Because the way he is going off on Kevin, someone obviously really laid into him for something. And he is really projecting it onto Kevin right now. Kevin mentions how he was going to ride his bike over to Paul's house later. Jack says, well, you know what? Now you're not going to ride it over to Paul's. You're going to put it away, and then you are going to go to your room. Now, he informs Kevin. Kevin, being Kevin, decides to mouth off as he walks away from the table, telling his dad to get a grip on himself. And Jack stops Kevin in his tracks, asking Kevin to repeat himself. Kevin mumbles, nothing. Jack keeps on him. I asked you a question, damn it! What did you say? Again, Kevin says nothing. Jack tells him, we have certain rules around here, young man, and you are going to follow them. And the first rule is you take care of your stuff. Kevin runs outside to take care of his bike. Jack takes his briefcase and jacket and walks out of the kitchen in a huff. Then we see Kevin in his room. A close-up of his face shows us the tears that are streaming down. As adult Kevin narrates how they didn't know why their dad was so hard on them. And then we flash back to the beach with a younger Kevin of about 4 or 5 years old. Jack is holding a football and he points in the direction of the camera and they both wave at it. Then young Kevin runs off with the football and Jack grabs him and starts tickling him on the blanket. Then he picks him up, wraps him in a bear hug. Adult Kevin says things were different then, when Jack was a nicer, more funner dad. Back then and wondering, you know, what had changed in that time. Well, work changed him, you know, responsibilities. He is the sole breadwinner in that family, so everything, he's got a wife and 3 kids to support, a mortgage, bills, that's all on him. You know, Norma, all she's really doing is she's keeping the house, the laundry, the food on the table, all that stuff. You know, that's stressful. You know, my husband and I, it's just us. We have no kids. I mean, I have a cat and a rabbit, and, you know, they might take a little bit of stuff, but not as much as raising a child. So we're not really, we don't hugely feel a big weight like that. Like Jack apparently does. In the next scene, Wayne and Kevin are on the school bus with Paul and Wayne's friend, Steve, discussing what their future careers are. Their future dream careers will be. Kevin tells them, first you have to have something you really want to be, and then you have to have a fallback position. Kevin tells them he wants to be a professional baseball player, and his fallbacks are astronaut or forest ranger. Honestly, Out of all the three of those, I'd say Forest Ranger sounds the most feasible for Kevin. Or the most practical. Now they're just seeing how far they can go with what their dream job would be. Basically, it's just a think broadly as far as you can go. Excuse me. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I wanted to be an author. When I was a teenager, I wanted to work in a video store or a movie theater. I know that sounds kind of like, why would anyone want to do that? I mean, as a teenager, that's what I wanted to do at the time. Out of all those things, only one came true. I worked in a video store in my early to mid-20s, Hollywood Video, where I met my husband Jeremy, and then I worked at Blockbuster for about a year and a half. I did go to college for a semester when I was 30 for their veterinarian program, but I was terrible and I failed my math class because I am terrible at math, and I decided, you know, I wasn't going to retake that class. The college's vet program at this college that I went to, it's very, very competitive. They only take, like, the top 10 students based on, I believe, their GPA or their highest grades. So I pretty much just finished out the semester. I had only taken, you know, the math class and the English class, which, I mean, I'm proud of that. I did get an A in that class, so. As of now, you know, I work at a factory. It isn't my dream job, but it pays the bills. So, Kevin Wayne and Paul and Wayne's friend Steve get into a discussion about where their fathers work after Steve mentions he might go into business with his father, but he doesn't know exactly what he does for a living, which leads Kevin to ponder what his dad actually does do at Norcom. Now, I'm going to play that scene, the bus scene, because I think it's kind of funny. So, I will play that, and I will be right back. I hope you enjoy the clip.
Now look, first you have to have something you really want to be, and then you have to have your fallback position. So like, I want to be a professional baseball player, but my fallbacks are either an astronaut or a force ranger.
Okay. I want to be a professional baseball player too.
And what's your fallback?
Professional football player.
What's your fallback a little further?
I don't know. I'll be going into business with my father.
What's your dad do?
I don't know. He works.
You don't know what your father does? I mean, that's the most stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, well, what does your father do?
He works at Norcom.
Yeah, he works at Norcom.
Norcom? What the hell is that?
It's a company, moron.
What does he do there? Is he the janitor?
No, he's the manager.
What does he manage, toilet bowls?
No, business, stupid. He manages business.
He manages business? What the hell is that supposed to be?
And that's when it hit me. I had absolutely no idea what that meant. Fortunately, Wayne was able to salvage some of our family dignity.
So you're too stupid to understand anyway, so...
Alright, well, I hope you enjoyed that clip. Now we're back at the house. We see news coverage about Saigon, and Norma is helping shorten Karen's skirt, who thinks it needs to be shorter. Norma counters back that if she makes it any shorter, it would be a headband. Didn't schools have limits on how short a skirt could be? I mean, even in public school back then, I kind of thought, or were they kind of lax depending on where they went to school? Kevin comes into the kitchen and asks Norma what his dad does for a living. She says, well, he works at Norcom. Kevin understands that, but he wants to know more, you know, specifics. Karen tells him it's part of the military-industrial complex. It is not, Norma insists and adds how they make little electronic thingies. Those little things help burn down villages and kill children in Southeast Asia, Karen informs them. Alright, thank you, Lisa Simpson. Seriously, I know she's a, you know, hippie and, you know, their ideals and everything like that, but does she really know that they do that, or is she just projecting? They're this big, for God's sake, Norma tells her, holding her thumb and forefinger about an inch apart for emphasis. They're not killing anyone's children. You admit they're used for military purposes, Karen continues. They're used in toasters and coffee makers, Norma tells her. The military doesn't eat toast, Karen says. Karen, for God's sake, Norma says testily. Yeah, really. Shut up, Karen. Go peddle that to someone who cares, and it surely is not Norma or Kevin. Kevin nervously asks if Jack actually makes the parts in question. Norma tells him no. Well, then what does he do? Kevin presses on. Norma has to think for a moment and says, well, he's a manager. He manages distribution and product support services. I kind of think, you know, as a kid, that would confuse even me. I think Kevin is looking for a basic breakdown of Jack's job in layman's terms. At that moment, Jack comes home, and Norma suggests Kevin ask him about his job. Of course, Jack is in a foul mood. Cripes, he's been like this 3 damn days in a row. His work must be in a total shitstorm. May I suggest a career change, possibly something less demanding? After dinner, Kevin makes an attempt to probe Jack's mind for answers. Instead of giving in to Kevin's questioning, he's distracted by the TV asking Kevin to repeat himself. Kevin asks again, what do you do all day? Incredulously, Jack repeats the question, what do I do all day? I shovel other people's crap so you kids can eat. Kevin asks him what he does, and Jack replies, I work at Norcom. You know that. Kevin, why not ask him when he's in a good mood, which I understand is not often. Hey, maybe wait for a weekend. He may be in a better mood then. Or be creative with your questions. Instead of asking point blank, what do you do? Try something like, well, we were discussing in class the other day about our parents' jobs. And well, could you give me a brief overview of the duties of someone in your position? That way you remove yourself from the equation and make it a more about a necessity of school requirement to know. Problem solved. Jack complains to Kevin he just wants 2 minutes of peace after work. Not annoying questions about a place he probably doesn't want to think about, let alone talk about when he's away from it. I mean, no one wants to talk about work after they've gotten home. I mean, you leave your work at work and home at home, as I say. Jack looks back at the TV and notices there's a commercial on. Missing what was said before the commercial, he gets frustrated, asking Kevin what he wants, and Kevin just mumbles, forget it, and leaves the room. Now we head to the kitchen, where Norma is drying the dishes, as Jack walks into the kitchen to drop off his empty glass. Adult Kevin comes on to tell us he was basically in bed sulking, so this scene is basically the discussion his parents have in his head. I noticed Jack pouring himself yet another drink. How many does that make now? 3 in the span of maybe 3 or 4 hours? He is seriously throwing them back. What went down at his job? Clearly he's something he wants to forget. Norma starts in, mentioning she overheard his conversation with Kevin, and how Kevin just wants to know what he does and what his day is like. Norma kindly puts a hand on Jack's shoulder, telling him he's gotta relax, which he just shrugs off, telling her, don't tell me to relax. If I were Jack, I'd listen to Norma because, spoilers, he has no idea what's to come 8 years later. I'm surprised in the run of the show, he hasn't suffered a stroke or a minor heart attack. He really should have found a less demanding job. Jack continues to mention filling out S-14 forms, whining customers, incompetent jackasses in shipping and receiving. How the hell, seriously, are they still employed? Shipping and receiving is probably the most important part of an importing and exporting job. Norma tells Jack, that's exactly it. He just wants to know more about you. I don't get why that's so hard for you to understand. As she walks out of the kitchen, good job, Norma. Apply that guilt, girl. Well, it seems to work because next we see Jack going to Kevin's room, asking Kevin what he wants to know about his job. I like how Jack feels awkward because he probably doesn't have these kinds of talks with his kids. Kevin doesn't say anything at first due to his bruised ego, but Jack continues saying how his job is really, you know, it's no big deal. Jack sits down on Wayne's bed across from Kevin, telling him about his day-to-day work operations, pushing papers from here to there, not some big glamorous thing. Kevin starts firing questions at Jack. What do the papers say? What's your office like? It's a typical office. Four walls, a ceiling, a door. Kevin asks if there are filing cabinets. Yeah, I got filing cabinets. Why? Kevin mumbles, I don't know. I just wondered. Jack tells Kevin he'll write him a note to get him out of school so he can, come to work and see what it's all about, basically. Jack gets up and tells Kevin goodnight and to set his alarm for 6:30 a.m. The next morning, we see Kevin coming into the kitchen wearing a suit and tie, ready to go to work with Jack. He looks so cute! Norma turns around and sees Kevin, telling him how nice he looks, and then she turns to Karen, asking her if she thinks Kevin looks nice. Karen takes one look at Kevin and says he looks like a running dog capitalist pig. Ouch, Karen, just agree that he looks nice. Damn, why does she have to politicize everything? Wayne comes into the kitchen asking if Uncle Sid finally kicked the bucket. I don't know who that is. And Norma chastises him, saying how Kevin is going to work with Jack today. Wayne looks at Kevin and asks, instead of school, well, I've always been interested in Dad's work. I want to go too. Easy, Wayne. Seriously, spoiler alert, you will be there soon enough. Wayne steals Kevin's toast as Jack comes into the kitchen telling Kevin they should get a move on because traffic will be hell. I wonder how far away Jack's work is. I'm guessing they must live in Cali, so I bet the traffic is a freaking beast. Luckily, my job is only like 20 minutes away, so it's not too terrible. As long as there's no road construction. Then I have to think of an alternate route to get there, which there are a few other routes to get there. They just take a little longer. As Kevin and his father walk towards Norcom from the parking lot, we hear adult Kevin telling us that he didn't know what to expect from seeing his father at work. He just was looking for a clue or an explanation for the way his father acted the way he did. Jack enters the building and introduces Kevin to Phyllis, Stan, Betty, and Marion. They must be the team of people that work in Jack's department under him, like secretaries, assistants, etc. They all crowd around Kevin. Stan tells Kevin he looks just like his dad, and the ladies call him adorable, and one of them even squeezes his cheeks. Yikes. They ask him questions like, what's he going to be when he grows up? And are you going to come work with us at Norcom? Adult Kevin tells of his plans to either be a center fielder for the San Francisco Giants or a crew member of the first flight to Mars. Jack saves Kevin from answering any more questions after one of the ladies asks if he plans to go into distribution like his father. To which he answers, I don't know, maybe. They enter Jack's office as Kevin takes it all in. It's a pretty simple office. Kevin is impressed by the big desk, swivel chair, and phone with buttons and flashing lights. Kevin asks to sit in Jack's chair, and from here we see Kevin envisioning himself as a bigwig executive with Karen as his secretary and Wayne as a sniveling, groveling assistant. Kevin can see firsthand the crap that Jack has to basically deal with on a daily basis. Problems arising with shipment orders and trying to get everything sorted out. I feel so bad for Jack. It just seems a lot of all of this could have been solved if there was better communication between the companies. Jack's assistant Stan is just completely incompetent. Jack's clearly had enough of this already and in need of some coffee, so he and Kevin excuse themselves for a coffee break. I love this scene between Kevin and his father in the break room. He really gets to see his father in a different light when they talk about dreams and what Jack really wanted to do with his life before he got married and settled down. I'm going to play this clip because it really is an endearing moment between father and son. And the clip... Kevin and Jack talk of dream jobs.
Dad?
Hmm?
When did did you decide you wanted to become a manager of distribution and product support services?
Sorry, it's just a funny sort of a thought. Really wanting to be the manager of distribution and product support services. I mean, it's a good job, but it's not what I thought I'd be doing with my life.
What did you want to do?
What are you kidding? Professional baseball player.
No, really.
Really? Well, I did have a fallback position.
This job?
No, not this job. I never told anybody this before, not even your mother. But when I was your age, I wanted to be captain of a ship.
The captain of a ship?
Yeah. You know, one of those big ocean liners, or a freighter, or an oil tanker. Be out there in the ocean in the middle of the night, navigating by the stars. Of course, they use instruments for all of that now, but I didn't know that. Yeah, I thought that'd be the greatest thing in the world.
How come you didn't do it?
How come? Well, you know, one thing leads to another. Went off to college, met your mom. Next summer, I got a job on a loading dock here at Norcom. Rest is history.
You would have made a great ship's captain, Dad.
Yeah, probably not. Probably get seasick. You know, Kevin, you can't do every silly thing you want to in life. You have to make your choices. You have to try and be happy with them. I think we've done pretty well. Don't you?
Yeah. I think we've done great.
As Kevin and his dad walk back from the break room, Kevin realizes that, yes, his dad is too good for Norcom. He's so much more than filling out S-14 forms and distribution reports. Before they go back into the office, Jack stops outside the door to straighten Kevin's tie. It's such a sweet moment there between father and son. I really thought that was cute. As soon as he walks in the door, his boss is all over his ass, talking about screw-ups in the shipping department, this being the third screw-up in 2 months, how it's all complete incompetence as he waves these papers in front of Jack's face. And Jack should be more efficient running the distribution department, or else his boss will find someone who can. And the next time he tries to get Jack on the phone, he better be there to answer it instead of on a coffee break. All right, I'd say start cleaning house there at Norcom. Starting with Stan. He is making decisions without informing Jack about them first, like hiring a new carrier and not letting Jack know when a problem arises, thinking it will straighten itself out. And now Kevin gets an eye-opening picture of what his dad has to deal with every day, quite possibly the main reason why he's in a bad mood when he gets home, too. Now it's the end of the day, and we're back to the Arnold house as Jack comes into the kitchen in a huff, loosening his tie and as he walks through the kitchen. And what's cute is when Kevin comes in right after him doing the same thing. Norma, Wayne, and Karen all look at each other in bewilderment. Later that evening, Kevin sees his father looking through his telescope in the backyard and decides to join him. Jack has Kevin look through the telescope and puts his hand on Kevin's shoulder. Jack explains about Polaris, the star that helped sailors find their way home, as an instrumental version of Blackbird plays in the background as the scene fades to black. Time for my Flower Power episode rating for episode 3, My Father's Office. I'm giving this episode 4 out of 5 Flower Power petals. 1 for Take Your Kid to Work Day, 2 for Kevin's suit, which he looks adorable in, 3, Kevin and Jack share a coffee break talk, 4, Kevin and Jack share a moment over the telescope in the backyard. I am taking 1 point away because Stan's incompetence, making decisions without talking to Jack first, putting him in hot water with his boss. All right, who was the worst this episode? Well, that was very easy for me. Jack's boss yelling at Jack in front of his kid, what the hell? So I'm giving him a toilet swirly, the boosh, he's getting this, to cool off his hot head. My line of the show is going to adult Kevin when he looks at his father after his visit to the office. He views him in a whole new light. I'll play that clip now. The clip is Kevin and Jack in the backyard.
That night, my father stood there looking up at the sky the way he always did. But suddenly, I realized I wasn't afraid of him in quite the same way anymore. The funny thing is, I felt like I'd lost something.
Come here, Kevin. That's Polaris, the North Star. That's how the sailors used to find their way home.
All right, now it's time for a user review for episode 3, My Father's Office. And this one was done in July of 2007 from IMDb, entitled Learning That Dad Is Just a Man. This review may contain spoilers. There comes a time when you see your parents as the rest of the world sees them. This was an incredibly touching episode. Kevin has always wondered why his dad came home from work grumpy. Now, after a day of watching his father at work, he learns that, one, his father is a shipping manager. Two, it is a high-pressure job. Three, when anything is late for any reason, even because a subordinate disobeyed his instructions, he is reamed out by his boss. Four, he only gets negative recognition. The soundtrack of the episode is the Beatles' Blackbird, which beautifully conveys the crushed hopes of a trapped man. Kevin sees how disappointed in his life his father is. It is very awkward to be put in the position of feeling sorry for a parent, and he realizes how deeply his father needs his family. All right, that was a beautiful, very touching review. I don't think I could have done a better job. Let's jump into episode 4, Angel, which aired on April 5th, 1988. Karen's continued disobedience and lack of respect leads to constant arguments with her parents. Guess who's coming to dinner? When Karen starts dating college guy Lewis, her sense of political views become warped by his overpowering influence. Everything comes to a head when she invites Lewis to dinner and he calls Jack out on his time serving in Korea, referring to him as a brainwashed idiot, as well as all the pointless deaths currently occurring in Vietnam. Will Karen see Lewis for who he really is, or will she be continued to be blindsided by his radical ideals? Well, we have some trivia for this episode. The Playboy issue Wayne peruses and from which he takes clippings is a February 1968 issue featuring Paulette Lindbergh on the front cover. The Sports Illustrated issue in Kevin's room is from July 29th, 1968, with Detroit pitcher Tigers pitcher Denny McLean on the cover. This episode originally aired exactly one day before Jason Hervey's 16th birthday, which means that the Playboy Wayne magazine that Wayne Arnold was tampering with most likely contained just the front cover. The episode opens with pictures of Jack and Norma's wedding day, and then on to Karen's birth. Standing in front of their first home with Jack, dressed in his military garbs, and toddler Karen. The song For Sentimental Reasons by Nat King Cole plays overhead as adult Kevin narrates the time around the 1950s where everyone around this time was listening to the Andrews Sisters. Everybody was having babies. So around the time of the baby boom, and everybody liked Ike, referring to Dwight D. Eisenhower. In the next photo, we see Jack and Norma in front of the house they currently live in, only now we see a 6-year-old Karen along with 4-year-old Wayne and baby Kevin. Everyone knew if they just worked hard and did all the right things, a sort of paradise of family life lay ahead, according to adult Kevin. We now see the family from possibly the last Christmas, all smiling, opening gifts. Karen looks so happy, hugs and kisses all around, and then we're presented with Karen from present day 1968. As she's coming in the door to the kitchen, rocking out to her portable 8-track player, blasting some Jimi Hendrix. What? No Janis Joplin? What about Alanis Morissette's Ironic or Avril Lavigne's Here's to Never Growing Up? I know, they didn't exist yet. She's clearly got no respect for those around her who may have different tastes in music. Wearing her felt hat, John Lennon glasses, peace chain, the works, just zoning out to Hendrix. Norma shouts over the music, telling her to turn it down. Karen just tells her turn that noise down. Karen just tells her, that noise is the greatest guitarist in the world. And Norma retorts, and I'm the greatest cook in the world. Now turn it down before we all get brain damage. And I might want to add, hearing loss, too bad it doesn't come with headphones so she could blow out her own eardrums. Problem solved. Karen insists she lives here too, and if I want to listen, but luckily Jack comes in and tells her to listen to her mother. At the table, Wayne's putting Oreo cookies over his ears. Speaking of Oreo cookies, has anyone tried the new limited edition Fireworks Oreos? I have. They are so good. They have in the cream, it's like little Pop Rocks in your mouth. It's really cool. So I'm going to take some for my coworker today because I want him to try it if he hasn't already bought them yet. So, did they even have dinner, or did they take a... Oh, hold on, I'm sorry. Blech, I'm all over the place, guys. They continue arguing seemingly long into the night, because now we see Kevin with a pillow over his head trying to block out the noise. Did they even have dinner, or did they take a break and then just continue this fight after? Or is it a different fight? Seems like they're talking about curfews now, and Karen's staying out past 10, when on weekends she can stay out till 12, which isn't, for 17, that's not a bad curfew. Oh, sweet, we get a school scene. We haven't been to school since episode 2. I wonder if they finished that sex ed course from episode 2 yet. Today we will be learning about values in class, and this is the first introduction to Miss White, Kevin's all-time teacher crush, but we won't see that until, I believe, season 2. Good thing this isn't happening today, because we all know how that would end up, don't we? Teacher in jail or knocked up, am I right, guys? But not our Miss White. She's a real sweetheart who seems to care about her students. We need more teachers like that. Not just there to earn a paycheck, but genuinely care about their students and wanting to see them succeed in life. I had a few teachers like that. Some I still occasionally speak to now and then also. On the board, we see Miss White write values and underline it on the blackboard. Oh my gosh, why can't I talk today? Literature is often a conflict of, and she points to the word values, encouraging the class to say the word out loud. Now, where do we get our values? She asks the class. The internet? Social media? Facebook? YouTube? Movies? Reality television? Music? Oh, wait. You mean this isn't 2017? The president? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were referring to a lack of values. My bad. I'm going to play this clip because it's funny, and at the end, if you listen closely, you can hear Miss White call a student a pain in the ass. I had to play it a second time just to be sure I heard it correctly. So I will play that clip entitled Values in Class. Values in School.
Values. Literature very often is about a conflict of...
values.
Now, where do we get our values? Winnie.
From school.
Anywhere else? Kevin.
From our parents.
Yes, okay. Very good, Kevin. Parents. Anywhere else?
The Beatles?
Yes, that is very good. We do get a lot of our tastes and our values from our cultural heroes. Now, is there anywhere else that we might get our values?
TV.
How about books?
Oh, books.
Yeah. Now, do we always agree on what values should be?
That was Joey Santano. He'd always wait for Miss White to ask a really easy rhetorical question.
Yes.
And then he'd get it wrong.
Anybody else? Yes, Mr. Pfeiffer?
No.
Good. Now, do values change through time? Say, from generation to generation.
Christine Hansen. She always gave these thoughtful, complete, downright inspired answers. She made us all sick, but teachers loved her.
Yes, Miss White. Some values change from generation to generation. But I think the really important ones are the heartfelt human values. And they stay the same throughout the ages.
It's very good, Christine. Okay. What a pain in the ass. Okay. Now, as we read, as we evaluate those characters that we meet, how do we know which values should change and which values are, as Christine so eloquently put it, heartfelt and timeless?
That was a tough question at any time, but in 1968...
Yes, Christine.
Can I go to the bathroom?
In 1968, even Christine Hansen couldn't answer that one.
We see a VW van pull up in front of the house and a guy gets out wearing a felt brown hat, which he takes off, and then he's also wearing a brown leather vest with beads and a peace necklace. It's Karen's new boyfriend of 2 weeks, Lewis, who Karen met at a college rally. You all may recognize him as actor John Corbett of Northern Exposure fame, which he would go on to star in 2 years later. He was also in Sex in the City, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and United States of Tara, as well as the show Parenthood in 2010. Here, he's got the flowing medium-length brown hair, and you can see the receding hairline already beginning. John Corbett was actually 27, almost 28, at the time of filming of this episode. I checked IMDb, and this was his second role. His first role was actually uncredited, from what I had noticed. Adult Kevin gives us the lowdown on Lewis. He's a junior at the State University, an honor student in political philosophy, and also active in social government and other social causes. Well, after hearing this, I can clearly see who's feeding Karen her political lines, and she is eating it all up. She's way too easily influenced. Lewis goes and sits down next to Karen on the grass, pulls the guitar out of her hand, and kisses her passionately as they lay down on the grass. Gross. Right in front of the house? What will the neighbors think? Seriously, go do that stuff in the van, you two. Kevin is not amused by this guy's influence over his sister and asks Paul to pass him the football and ends up chucking the ball at Lewis's head and then feigning innocence when Karen tells him to watch what he's doing. Karen and Lewis drive away in the van. Kevin's watching TV, a color TV, I might add, which technically they won't have till much later, spoiler alert, and becomes a point of contention in season 2, the Christmas episode. He's watching the show Gunsmoke, I think. Karen and Lewis walk in and they're talking about a march for the Vietnamese people and how, with it being at the college and a weeknight, Karen will be unable to attend. She offers him iced tea and goes to the kitchen, but not before telling Kevin to turn the TV down. And Lewis mentions how he likes these old fascist films, how they're more like parodies of themselves by now. Lewis makes a phone call to Marissa, telling her she can crash at his place after the march. Lewis has got some nerve calling another girl on his current girlfriend's phone. Already he's made my who's the worst this episode list, I think. Kevin overhears Lewis's phone conversation with Marissa, ending the conversation with, "I love you." WTF, I hope Karen's making sure he uses a condom when they bang because seriously, this guy seems like he is the king of venereal diseases. Lewis hangs up the phone and turns to face Kevin, who tells Lewis that he's onto him. Lewis says he doesn't know what Kevin's talking about, and then Kevin punches Lewis, who goes flying over the couch. Karen comes out to the commotion, and Kevin says, "Sorry, sis. He was no good." She tells him she's so happy to have a brother like him, and then she goes to give him a hug and a kiss. This is obviously a fantasy in Kevin's mind after watching the show Gunsmoke. Now we're back to reality when Kevin confronts Lewis about Marissa and he tells him that she is just a friend. Kevin asks Lewis to elaborate, and Lewis tells Kevin, "Are you asking if she's my lover?" Ugh, vomit. Lewis then asks Kevin if he wants to punch him. Do something violent. Who in the hell is this guy? What a damned weirdo. He then tells Kevin that he and Karen love each other, but they have an open and trusting love. Yeah, but does she know that? Or does she see it as something more like a commitment? "We don't own one another like a farmer owns a cow," he says, grabbing Kevin's arm. Why does he grab his arm? Is he trying to emphasize his point as Kevin yanks his arm away? Basically, Lewis is unattached, giving free love to all the college girls who crash at his place. We hear Kevin, Fred Savage's inner monologue. Seriously, why did they bring that back, I'm wondering? Are they trying to separate the adult Kevin looking back on his memory from the present Kevin in the moment? Kevin asks if Karen knows about this, but before Lewis can answer, Karen comes back in with the iced tea. I almost kind of want to know what his answer might have been. Lewis mentions Marissa joining him at the march. So Karen does know about Marissa. They continue to make out on the couch. Kevin decides to go to his mom, who's in the kitchen, breaking apart green beans, and he basically wants to see how Norma feels about this whole Lewis situation. He informs her Lewis is in their living room with Karen. He continues to goad Norma, asking if she wants to meet him. She tells him, you know, that's up to Karen. If she wants to introduce, you know, Lewis to her, she will. Norma asks Kevin what's Lewis like, and he tells her, disturbing. Wrong choice of words, Kevin, because now she's going to jump all over that, demanding to know what Kevin means by that. I mean, when she thinks disturbing, she is probably thinking a sexual deviant, a cult leader involved in drinking blood, animal sacrifices, or inhumane torture. Why didn't he say something along the lines of, well, he has a very strong and unhealthy political views and is heavily influencing Karen's state of mind? Karen and Lewis walk through the door to the kitchen, and we see Karen shoving her shirt back into her skirt. And of course, Norma sees this but doesn't say anything. So, let me get this straight. He was filling her up on the living room couch. That guy seriously has got no respect for anybody. She surely has no respect for anybody. Why the hell would you do that in your own home? Especially if your mother's right in the freaking kitchen. I mean, seriously, that is nasty. Boundaries, people. Norma plays nice and welcomes Lewis. But just before Norma's face, you can just see the uncomfortableness radiating off her in waves when she saw Karen tucking her shirt in. It's like, okay, I know what was going on there. Louis and Norma shake hands, and Norma says they're having chicken for dinner along with vegetables. Karen crudely informs Norma, like she should technically already know this, that Louis doesn't eat meat, and he casually mentions how he just has qualms about how livestock is raised. Well, Louis would be happy with the now, because we have cage-free chickens and free-range cows that are grass-fed. Norma assures him that he's more than welcome to fill up on salad and vegetables if he prefers. He lets her know he might take her up on that. As Norma takes out a cleaver knife and cuts up the chicken. They didn't have boneless, skinless chicken back then? Norma asks him, so you really don't eat meat? Norma's probably never met anyone like that. I mean, that's probably, you know, these vegan, vegetarian people, you know, this is probably new to them. You know, I kind of wonder, you know, was this kind of started, you know, through the hippie movement at all? I mean, or it's just basically anyone's personal preference of how they feel about it. No, he really doesn't, he says, smiling. Louis asks her what she does and then clarifies, for a living. She says, nothing, I'm a housewife. To which Louis replies, well, that's certainly not nothing. She agrees with him. She is really slamming that cleaver down on that chicken. Is she angry or nervous around him? Norma tells him it can be demanding at times, and then Louis asks her if she finds it fulfilling. She tells him she never thought of it like that. And then Karen tells her that she should think about it. Okay, how dare she talk to her mother like that? She's seriously overstepping there. Just because she's with this guy, she thinks she knows more than her mother? Like, oh, we know more than you. You should really think about this, these type of things. Louis asks Norma if she went to college, and she tells him she was a history major, but she dropped out freshman year when she met Kevin's father. That is interesting to kind of get her backstory here, but it's conflicting with two other ways later on that she says she met Jack. While selling him a tie at a department store, which actually is going to come up in the next episode entitled The Phone Call. Then later on, she says she met him at a dance where the person she was with got into a fight with Jack over Norma. So was she kind of working at the store while in college and then she got with him at a dance? I mean, maybe there could be logic in there. I don't know. I'm just trying to piece these things together. Not to mention, she would have been, what, 18, 19 when she went to college? That's if she went right after high school. So she started her life young, getting married and having a family right away. She really didn't get to get that degree as a history major. So Louis asks her if she regrets not finishing college and that a lot of women find it demeaning spending their lives serving their husbands and families. Louis, who in the hell are you talking to? Other college kids? Is this where you're getting your information? Are they married, or are you doing surveys of housewives to get their perspective? If they found it that demeaning, they wouldn't be getting married and having kids. These damn college kids thinking they know everything, being egotistical and all. He's giving college kids back then a bad rep. And sweet little Karen is buying into all of it. Norma slams the cleaver down so hard on a piece of chicken, and it hilariously lands right in Louis's crotch. He just laughs it off as she peels it off his pants. Please, please tell me she threw that piece away. Tell me she didn't cook it. We don't see it, so she might have put it with the others. Oh, gross. Kevin decides to bring Wayne into the fold of this Louis situation, and apparently he could care less as we see him cutting up a Playboy magazine. What is he going to do with these things? I mean, is he going to tape them to his headboard? I'm sure Norma would love that. Kevin informs Wayne that this guy Louis is a real butthead, and he insulted their mom, plus he's a radical at college. So he's into, you know, causes and marches and all these political views. Also, he and Karen are lovers. Wayne's head shoots up at this, especially when Kevin mentions Louis's other lover, Marissa. What's her last name? Cooper? Get it? Marissa Cooper? OC fans. Wayne gets in to this astounded at the idea of two lovers and mentions, as he calls it, the microbus, which he swears he saw rocking back and forth before. Hence, if the van's rockin', don't come a-knockin'. Wayne tells Kevin they should drill a hole and set up a camera. Wait, what? Why? Wayne, what are you implying? You want to see this guy pounding your sister? Or do you want to play cheaters and catch him in the act of cheating with on Karen and Marissa? Alright. Finally, we get to the dinner scene. Jack gets to meet Lewis. Now, I'm going to play this clip. Play the scene because I seriously cannot do it justice by describing it. So this is clip number 2 entitled Dinner with Lewis.
Hi, Lewis. Nice to meet you.
And it was no small hope. It was Dad, the Maginot Line of family resistance. Things were going to be okay. Dad would take care of this guy. Now the Arnold men would stand together.
Oh, God, Marissa.
Well, some of the Arnold men.
No chicken?
Lewis doesn't eat meat, Dad.
Hey, just thought I'd mention it.
No meat, Lewis?
No. Meat just doesn't turn me on, really.
Yeah, that's not what I heard, pal.
No meat, huh? Imagine that.
I knew it. Dad would carve through this guy like a butcher carves through a pork loin.
Oh, I heard, honey, why the Vanderbilts didn't go to Brian's funeral. They were in Chicago. Dick's mother had a stroke. One of the boys on our block was killed in Vietnam several weeks ago.
Oh, I know. I mean, Karen told me. Another meaningless death.
I beg your pardon?
I just meant that it's such a shame a kid has to die for basically no reason.
More broccoli, anyone?
I don't think it's meaningless when a young man dies for freedom and for his country.
I just have a little trouble justifying dying for a government that systematically represses its citizens.
Oh, honey, try the potatoes. I put grated cheese on them.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
It means that the United States government is responsible for the oppression of blacks, women, free speech.
Well, perhaps, little lady, you'd like to go live in Russia for a while, huh?
I think what Karen's saying is that...
Look, Buster, I happen to believe that freedom and democracy have certain advantages that communist dictatorships don't, and that is what Vietnam is all about.
No, man, that's what they brainwash you to believe it's all about. They turn people into brainwashed morons.
My hunch was that my father would not let being called a brainwashed moron at his dinner table go by unremarked.
So, you think I've been brainwashed, do you, Lewis?
No. Look, I think anyone who supports the American war effort in Vietnam is having the wool pulled over his eyes.
I see.
Just like they did with Korea.
The hell do you know about Korea? I was in Korea. I lost a lot of good friends there.
Daddy, that doesn't have anything to do with what we're saying.
And they weren't brainwashed. They were brave men who weren't afraid to fight for what they believed in. Now, if you're afraid to fight, why don't you just say so? Why don't you just admit that you're chicken?
You're damn right. I am chicken. I don't want to die like your friends. What do you think that you achieved over there? Hmm? Do you think that those people are free? They're not free, man. Except to buy Coca-Cola and Nestle's Quick, get loans from Chase Manhattan Bank.
That's crap.
You were used, man, and your friends were used.
That's crap!
Daddy, you never listen to what we say. Some of what we say is true.
Don't accept all this death and then just...
Well, I definitely have something to say about this scene. He is a guest in their home and wait the hell out of line. Here, calling Brian Cooper's death meaningless, and then lighting into Jack about Korea, calling him brainwashed when he doesn't know shit about it. I would have told him, you know what, you need to leave. But then, Karen defends him, siding with him over her own father. What the hell, Karen? You need to get your priorities straight, and you need to open your eyes, girl. He is the one brainwashing her. He shows them his draft notice and how he plans to go to Canada instead of going to war to fight. Is this what fueled his protesting fire? When did this start? When he found out that he was drafted? Or has this been going on for a while? Then he brings in Wayne and Kevin, saying soon they'll be next. Kevin's got what? At least, he's 12. He's got maybe, if the draft were to keep going, he's got what, 6 years? And maybe Wayne has maybe two? That's if they're drafting them when they're 18. What a piece of shit of a human being. Thank goodness Karen finds out that he's sleeping with Marissa and then she breaks up with him. She's like, well, you just said that you were in love with her. You didn't say that you were sleeping together. What the hell do you think that means? Oh my gosh. Oh, seriously, Karen, you knew about this girl. How could you not suspect that he was sleeping with her? Can you seriously possibly tell me that you are that naive? I apologize seriously for harping, but this guy, along with Karen's actions, really set me off this episode. Karen winds up heartbroken as Jack looks out of his bedroom window at the scene. Adult Kevin narrates as Kevin and Wayne sleep peacefully in their beds. Well, that is the end of the episode, everybody. Now it's time for my Flower Power episode rating for the episode 4, Angel. I am giving it 2 out of 5 Flower Power petals. 1 for Jack standing up and defending himself to Lewis's radical ideals. 2 for Norma sending that chicken flying into Lewis's lap, being he's a vegetarian and all. I did knock off 3 Flower Power petals, mainly for Lewis's attitude towards Jack and Norma, and also for Karen defending her boyfriend instead of standing up to him and siding with her father. Okay, who was the worst this episode? I am giving it to both Lewis and Karen, everybody. Lewis, you're getting the boosh, a toilet swirly, which is the highest on the worst scale, for all the crap you gave to the Arnold family this episode, insulting Jack and Norma, as well as brainwashing and cheating on Karen. And for Karen, I am going with a bra snap, which is the lowest on the worst scale, for not sticking up to her father and her entire bad attitude this episode. My line of the show goes to adult Kevin. Who was right and who was wrong? Well, I'm supposed to be an adult now, and I still can't completely figure that one out. But at some point, late at night, near sleep, the ideas and disagreements sort of dissolve, and you're just left there with the people. And people were no different then than they've always been and always will be. Young girls get their hearts broken. Men and women suffer alone over the choices they've made. And young boys, full of confusion, full of fear, full of love and courage, grow up stealthily in their sleep. All right, well, stay tuned for next week's podcast episode where I discuss episode 5 and 6, The Phone Call and Dance With Me, the final 2 episodes of season 1. To stay connected to the podcast, you can visit the Facebook page at Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast, Instagram, LBOM Wonder Years podcast, and Twitter, Wonder Years Pod. I am thinking of whether or not I'm going to turn this from a bi-weekly to a weekly podcast. I am doing a weekly podcast of Punky Brewster, so I could attempt to possibly make this a weekly one to start out, but if it does get to be a little too much, I might just go back to the original plan of a bi-weekly podcast. I just thought I'd like to get enough out there for you so that way eventually if things start to get a little too much, I can move into bi-weekly. So, all right. Well, until next time, peace out, Wonderlings. I will be back next week with a new episode. And have a good, wonderful week. And like I said, I'll see you next week. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.